Some may find the following disturbing. Discretion is advised.
Welcome, everyone, to a fresh edition of GTF, Gabriel Talks Football. My name is Aldo Gandia. It's a very, very special show that we have for you. Before we get started, I just want to let our Facebook viewers know that if you want us to see your comments during the live show, then all you got to do is go to register at StreamYard.com/Facebook. We'd love to see your comments during the live part of our show. And those of you watching on demand, we're available wherever you get your audio podcast. Just search Barroom Network and you get a full list of all your shows, all of our shows. And so hope you will do that and leave us a good review. All right, let's welcome in the man of the hour. His name is Greg Gabriel. Greg, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. I'm tired too, because yesterday's a long day waiting for nothing.
Yes.
I was thinking, okay, last year it took them about 25 minutes to announce TJ Edwards. It was about 4 minutes before they announced Swift. And by the way, Swifty will probably be on before. Swifty was like really happy that now we can get a Bears shirt with his name on it.
I love it.
But anyway, and that's it. You know?
That is it. And so I'll ask you, what's the temperature like regarding Justin Fields? Because that was the topic in all the national morning shows. And even last night is Fields looks like he might still be with the Chicago Bears around draft time. What are your feelings about that?
I honestly feel it's a foregone conclusion. You look at what happened yesterday musical chairs with the quarterbacks, and right now there's no more chairs, and the music's still running. But the interesting thing is, go back with last week, Schefter says there's a lot of people in the building who want to keep them. Okay, then yesterday Rappaport says Bears haven't even tried to trade him yet.
Wow.
And then Wilbon says last night, it ain't happening on his show. So these are connected people in the national media.
Mm-hmm.
And I just can't see it happening. Now, in saying that, I know I'm getting bombed all every day. I get bombed and I'll get bombed again, and I don't really care. I cannot see Caleb and Justin in the same locker room. I lived through Sed Benson and Thomas Jones. I know what that was like. And that wasn't fun. Caleb and Justin in the same locker room would make that look like a Sunday church picnic.
Let me ask you this. Do you think then that there's a possibility that the Bears will draft a quarterback, but it's not Caleb Williams? Maybe if they trade down a late first rounder, a second rounder, someone.
It depends. I don't know if we'll get to this with Peter, but you know what Peter suggested? Trade down twice. And that was a couple of weeks ago in his final column. When you look at what they didn't do yesterday, you still got to get two wide receivers. You got to get an edge. You need another defensive tackle.
Mm-hmm.
You probably need an offensive tackle or another interior lineman. And you don't have any picks. You got two ones, no two. You got a total of five picks. So it's like, okay, what's the obvious thing going on here?
Yeah.
People what don't want to believe it, or I'm, I shouldn't say people. There is a large portion of the fan base that doesn't want to believe that. But when you start hearing the national people, well, where the hell do you think these national people are getting it?
Yeah, right. Where are they getting it from? So let me ask this. Do you think that the Bears right now under Ryan Poles are going to make any significant free agent acquisition with the money that they have? It looks like Danielle Hunter is probably out of reach. He's asking for too much money. Is that your sense?
From what I got a text from one of the NFL network guys yesterday, because I said, what's wrong here? Mm-hmm. And he is close to that situation. Said he was waiting on Hunter and he wants Hunter money. Or not, rather, waiting on Burns and wants Burns money. Okay, so that's 30 plus million for a guy who's going to be 30 years old in October. So it's not that he's not worth it, but you gave round figure $24 million to Tez Sweat, at the trade deadline, mm-hmm. and anointed him. So you're going to bring in another guy and give him $5, $6, $7 million more. You know, my experience in a locker room is that ain't going to sit well either, you know, especially with Sweat. And so I think, you know, if you can get away with giving Hunter a little bit more money, especially given the production, but the age is the age. And right now, Ryan Poles has signed one player to a multi-year contract, and that's the safety. Kevin Byam the other day. So, and that was just to a 2-year deal at a very reasonable price. I mean, when you look at the money compared to like Xavier McKinney got $10 million more than Byam got. And Byam is a really good football player. I mean, he is a huge upgrade over Eddie Jackson in mm-hmm. all areas.
He can tackle.
Then, he also has got like 12 more interceptions in his career. Then you got, and the career's the same length, they're the same age.
Right.
And Swift, last year, you go back to last year, who's the media was naming as the number one running back in free agency? It was DeAndre Swift.
DeAndre Swift, that's right.
Okay, and actually Monty got all the money. Monty, I think, got the second highest deal. Swift mm-hmm. ended up getting leftovers, had a excellent year at Philly, ran for over 1,000 yards. But he's very fast. He's very instinctive. But his ability to catch out of the backfield is really the big difference maker. I mean, and they got him for cheap money, too. I mean, they got two really good deals. You know, people said they're going to get another interior offensive lineman, you know. Biggsy said, no, Bates is the center. And Bates is costing $4 million, which is the same money they were paying Patrick. They've got relatively inexpensive deals done. And if you follow everything that Ryan Poles has done, this is his third free agency period now. He doesn't overextend. He doesn't overpay. He's got a number in his head. Actually, he and his cap people, right. They got a number in their head. This is where we'll go. And if it goes over to that, they walk away. It's real simple. You know, they're not going to put themselves in the position that Ryan Pace put the Bears in mm-hmm. with these extravagant contracts that really killed the beginning of the Poles era.
That's right.
Because you had to just strip down the team. You know, yeah. So now you got to build it right, and you got to give – the right money to the right people, and you've got to do it wisely. Yeah. And I think he's doing a very commendable job. I really do. Do you get frustrated? And I tweeted this out yesterday. Yeah, I get it that you're frustrated because you want more players and there's money there. But the worst thing you can do is overspend mm-hmm. and overpay for a guy.
I agree. I agree with the approach. A methodical, disciplined approach is what we should do, and it's what Poles is doing. The question for me is, are these the right players? For instance, Nathan asks, you know, can we trust Bates at center? Greg, do you trust Bates at center?
I have watched I'm a Buffalo Bills fan, right? Mm-hmm. So I've seen Bates play. Bates, when the Bears offered a did an offer sheet on Bates 2 years ago, Bates had started the last half of that season at guard and really played well. Mm-hmm. And then last year he started all year. I think the last few games were not his best, but overall, really good. And he's always been worked in at center. There's a game I looked at. I think they played the Bills in preseason where he takes Bacon's and just drives the ass into the ground. That's on tape. Now, yeah, he's not a little upgrade over Patrick. First of all, he's very, very athletic. So he fits what they're looking for. He is a huge upgrade over Lucas Patrick. Mm. And don't forget, he's the guy that they wanted 2 years ago. Poles and Simo had an affection for him. And 2 years later, he became available. Buffalo was in a terrible cap situation. And they're actually real bad. They still got to get rid of players because they signed players, re-signed players yesterday. Going into yesterday, they were still way over the cap. They got to be down by tomorrow. They're going to be chopping a bunch of heads today and tomorrow morning. They got to, you know, it's got to be, you got to be cap compliant by 3 Central tomorrow afternoon.
Okay, and then after the draft, there's usually more veterans that are released. Isn't that?
Yeah,
the case?
Then you find out what your rookies, who you got in the draft.
Yeah.
And if you got the guys you really want, then there's other, you know, you got the post June 1st cuts. So it'll be, I don't know how many, could there be a few more guys cut from the Bears? Could be. Mm-hmm. You know, who? I don't know. You know, but it depends. But right now I'm thinking maybe you see one more multi-year deal and unless something big happens with Hunter. Mm-hmm. And I'm shocked that nobody signed him yet. But then when you look at what he wants, I think that's why teams are balking. Mm-hmm. They just, you know, don't want to give a 30-year-old. And his argument will be, and I know I'm kind of going all over the place, but Jones just got 30 and we're the same age. Jones got better than 30. So, you know, it's an interesting dynamic and just got to be patient and see how it plays out.
Peter King should be joining us very soon. One of the things that has, you know, I want Justin Fields to remain as a starting quarterback for the Chicago Bears. I want to surround them with more talent. But one of the things that I'm concerned about is Luke Getsy gets an offensive coordinator job. They must have looked at the tape and said, you know, this guy is doing some good things. Unfortunately, the quarterback and the players aren't executing it. Darnell Mooney now gets a really nice contract. He gambled on himself, and despite the fact that there weren't any results there, he got paid. And so could we be overestimating what Justin Fields can potentially do? Because if the reports are correct that there are no suitors for him, that the market isn't what it should be or people thought it would be, maybe we're overestimating the possibilities, the potential of Justin Fields.
Or maybe the real truth is what Rappaport said yesterday, and they really aren't chopping him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're answering the phone, but they're not like, no, not yet. You know, you can answer that different ways. And as far as going back to Mooney, and I've said this before, I blame Mooney's downfall, not on Mooney. I blame it on Getsy. How can a guy be that good for 2 years
mm-hmm.
and then just fall off the cliff? Doesn't make sense to me. There's a lot. I blame a lot on Getsy, that offense, how they operated that offense. And then I look at Shane Waldron and I see the job that he did with Geno Smith, who doesn't have 1/10 the natural talent that Justin Fields has, and he gets him in a Pro Bowl. Why do you not want to see how that plays out?
That's a question that I've been asking too. Bellissimo had, you know, Bellissimo inspired that last question. He wrote, "Greg, I'm a simple man. Explain the cult logic that there's no market for Fields. He must be so bad, despite we aren't shopping versus Bears haven't had an offer for number one, Caleb."
You don't know the Bears haven't had an offer for number one. Do you think they're going to advertise it?
Yeah.
No. Did you know there was an offer for number one that up until that trade was made last year? No, you're not going to say, oh, we got an offer.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, you keep quiet about that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the right time to pull the trigger, you pull the trigger.
Yep. And Bellissimo says that's exactly the point he's trying to make.
And like I said, the cult does not want to change their narrative. I had another tweet yesterday. The many in the Chicago media are having a tough time trying to explain what's going on today, meaning mm-hmm. yesterday. And they are. Mm-hmm. Because everything they thought was going to happen hasn't happened yet.
Funny, I just put that up in the screen from Evie. She says, love how the insiders have to walk back their takes now.
You know, they just forget. The one thing about being an insider, these insiders, they don't care. I mean, they just, you know, I say that. They're never held accountable.
Yeah, if you were to go back and document what the insiders have been saying about the Bears and Justin Fields over the last 3 months, it would be a lot of flip-flopping, a lot of readjusting, and it makes you wonder how much of it is guessing and how much is really truly inside information. You know, staying on that topic, Greg, so when an insider is reporting something, that's generally coming from agents. It's not coming from Hallis Hall, right?
Generally, yeah.
Yeah. So
okay, now I can say this. I said it to you off the year. They made one signing yesterday. They had the safety on Sunday, but he was not a UFA. He was a street free agent because he was cut. So he was able to be signed before, or a deal was able to be made before yesterday. The Bears were in on Leonard Williams. Okay, and I work for the agency that represents Leonard Williams and the agent who was actually involved in that, you know, flat out told me so, you know, as they were in negotiations and then sent me a text saying, nope, he's going back to Seattle. So, but again, that money, Leonard Williams got an average of $21.5 million and another guy that's 30 years old. You know, that's just not what Poles does.
Right. Yeah, he is, you know, incredibly disciplined. And, you know, I'd love to learn more about Ian Cunningham's role right now. Because he's probably working the phones and trying to negotiate deals. Or maybe his role is to answer some of these feelers. Answer the phone and say no, like you responded.
You mean as far as the negotiation?
Yeah, with what's going on
that's
now.
Really, that's Feinstein. Is that his name? Feinstein? That's his
new
job.
Guy? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and he's been there for over a year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like he's new. And he came from, he worked in the league office and the management council, you know, studying contracts and stuff. So, I mean, he's well-versed in this. Yeah. So, and they put together good deals.
Yeah, like I know somebody else who's well versed in a lot of stuff about pro football. His name is Peter King, and let's welcome him in now. Peter, how are you?
Hey, Peter, how are you, my friend?
Greg, how's life going?
Really good.
Good.
How about you? You're the guy that, you know, all of a sudden retired. But wait, before I even go there,
yeah,
I got to tell you, Monday I go through withdrawal. Every Monday I get up, and the first thing I do is read your column, and then it's like Monday I get up, go to Pro Football Talk, there's no column. It's like, what do I do? So it's my wake up tonic every Monday morning. So and the question I wanted to ask you, because it's always superbly written and there's always so much information. But I had, and until you wrote your final column 2 weeks ago, I had no idea it was really 15,000 words. How do you do that? I mean, that's got to take you all week to do it.
Well, Greg, thank you. Thanks for having me on, guys. Honestly, you know, it's been a labor of love. It averaged this year, I think, 10,800 words. And it's just something that Myron Cope, the old Pittsburgh broadcaster, used to have this saying, I married a Pittsburgh girl. So many nights over the years, I'd be sitting there, we'd be listening to his talk show, in Pittsburgh, his sports talk show at night. And he would start it by taking out what he called his shirt pocket notes. And through the course of the day, he would go just write down on a piece of paper, I want to talk about this. I want to talk about this with the Pirates, this with the Steelers, this with Pitt, whatever. And that's how he would do his show, just the things that occurred to him during the day. So honestly, that's kind of how this column, how I did this column. Honestly, I always felt like the most important thing every Sunday was to write about something that either I was very deep into and I knew about, even if it wasn't the most important thing in the NFL that week, or if some mega event happened, yeah, I tried to get to the bottom of that. And so, but half the column was always done by the time the game started on Sunday. And then it would be 11 o'clock at night as I sat here in Brooklyn. We've lived in Brooklyn now for the last 5 years. I'd sit in Brooklyn probably half the nights I would be here, half the nights I'd be somewhere on the road. And then it was a sprint to write 5,000 words in 4 hours and make it make a little bit of sense. So that's basically how I did the thing.
And that was the same thing when you were Monday morning quarterback, correct?
Yeah, Monday morning quarterback was a little different because I essentially, I mean, what's odd about doing Monday morning quarterback, honestly, is that I had another job. I was running this website, the MMQB. And when I was running this website, the one thing that I had to do was I had to take care of my staff. And my staff, it was a demanding job. So I basically had two jobs. And I decided after doing that for 5 years that if I did it for five more years, I wouldn't be alive anymore. I couldn't have done it. So then I went to NBC, and then that's all I did. I did two or three TV stories a year. I went on with Florio once a week on Friday morning, but that's 2 hours just talking football is not heavy lifting. And that's really what my job became. So the job became a lot more tolerable after I left SI, even though I'm so bummed about what's happened to SI. It's something I really needed to do for myself, you know, mentally, you know.
Right. Now, I know we met, God, it's almost 40 years ago. You were writing
for the Giants.
Yeah, you were writing for Newsday. You were the beat writer for the Giants. What year did you start with? Because I know you were at Cincinnati before that.
I started in 85. I did Newsday 85 to 88, and then I went to SI in 1989. So, yeah, that – the Newsday thing, covering the Giants, was so important to me because, you know, it was a high-profile beat. There were 19, you know, people don't quite understand the difference between today and yesterday. It's weird. There were 19 newspapers, daily newspapers, that covered the New York Giants in 1985 when I got there. And so it's different today. There's probably 19 people around the Giants every day, or 25 or however many. So the amount of people is the same. It's just how the information is delivered is a lot different. And that's really what has changed. But what was really valuable about that is that Parcells was tough as shoe leather. George Young was tough to deal with at times too. But they were both really good to deal with for a young, aggressive beat guy because they each had respect. Parcells, people would say, oh, he always derided the media. He always killed the media. And I say, yeah, but he did have respect for us doing our job. So, and George obviously did too. So, and there were so many stars on that team and a lot of good guys on that team. And people say, what was Lawrence Taylor like? And I said, I don't know. I never got to know Lawrence Taylor. None of us did. We didn't know that guy. And, you know, If I were walking on a sidewalk in New York today, and the sidewalk was empty, and I was approaching Lawrence Taylor, and I knew that was Lawrence Taylor, he'd walk right by me and have no idea who I am, even though I wrote about him for 4 years. That's because, and it doesn't make him a bad guy. He just didn't care. He wasn't into the quote building of relationships that a lot of guys do with the media a lot of times. But yeah, that was really a fun team to cover, in part because they were winning, and when a team wins, life is usually pretty good.
Yeah, Bill had his favorites, and I know for a fact he spoke highly of you. I worked with Bill for 7 or 8 years there, and but there's other guys that he could care less about. But I think a lot of the way, he'd start yelling at you guys and stuff, but I think some of that was just the Bill Parcells facade.
It was a lot of it was show.
I'm in control here.
Yeah. They had this thing that I used to, me and a couple of other guys covering the Giants used to walk out of press conferences with him and ask him a couple of questions as he walked down the hallway to go back to his office. And I'll never forget, one day the PR guy there said, "Hey, we can't do that anymore. You're getting stuff other guys aren't getting." So I said, "Well, okay." And I mentioned it to Parcells, and I said, "If I ever really need you, can I call your office phone, say it's 6:30 in the morning?" He says, "Well, if you need me, show up at my parking space. Meet me in the morning." I said, "What time?" He goes, "Oh, I get in about 5:45, maybe 6 o'clock. So about 2 weeks later, I was there standing in his parking space, and he was just utterly shocked that I would be there. And I did that a few times. And that is what got me the relationship with Parcells. I wouldn't quote him, but I would get good information from him at the time. So Parcells was fair. He was fair to everybody, and may have been a little bit better with me because he knew. I used to tell him, "Hey, Bill, nobody reads Newsday. We're over here in New Jersey. It's this Long Island newspaper. So I have to do kind of extra things to be seen, to be known." But anyway, he was fun to cover.
He was. And one thing about Bill, and that was the first full-time team job I had, was with the Giants. I was, with the Bills part-time for 3 years. That when it got into the draft process, and even during training camp, when we talked about players, is that he was going to challenge you.
Yeah.
And basically, if I said the sky's blue, he's going to start arguing that it's red. Because he wants you to have a firm conviction of what you believe. And so if you don't fight back with him, and part of that started with George. George Young was the same way.
Yeah.
George loved to have arguments when we had meetings leading up to the draft. Because he told me, he said, "If we don't argue about it, we're not getting it right."
Yeah. That's one of the things I've really liked about doing this job. That convinced me, and that made me understand that you can't throw some lazy take up to those guys. They wouldn't have it. George had no problem showing you up in front of people. Not in a bad way, but if you hadn't done your homework, he'd be all over you. So that was really, really great training for me. I look back on it very fondly.
So let's change course a little bit. In your final column, you throw out that little nugget about the Bears and Justin Fields, and if it's your thought that they may, or what they should do, is trade down.
Yeah. And I
think now it's, a little more than 2 weeks after you wrote that, and there's been a lot of quarterbacks changing hands, and Justin Fields isn't one of them. And I can't help but think that they're going to end up trading that pick. because there's no place for Justin to go. And then, you know, Rappaport said yesterday they haven't even tried to shop him yet. So, I mean, and who knows exactly what's true. But,
you know, hey, Greg, remember one thing I learned in the 2004 draft when the Giants ended up with Eli Manning, even though Manning was the first pick in the draft by San Diego. And Ernie Accorsi was the GM of the Giants at the time. Everybody in the league knew that he wanted Eli. And so A.J. Smith was the GM of the Chargers. And he doesn't hear from Ernie the whole time. He doesn't hear from him prior to the first pick. He doesn't hear from him when the Giants have the fourth pick in the draft. And so with about 6 minutes left on the clock in the fourth pick, the Giants are just sitting there. And A.J. Smith calls and he said, "Hey, I thought you were going to call." And he goes, "Oh, well, no, I think we're pretty good here. I think we're pretty good." And so then A.J., they ended up making this deal where the Chargers get Phillip Rivers and the Giants get Manning. But I remember that night talking to Ernie, and Ernie said, "If I make the phone call, it's going to cost us OCU Mignora. And we are not trading OCU Mignora." So I knew that they wanted Phillip Rivers, and I knew they didn't want Eli Manning. So I figured they have to call. They're going to call. But if you make the first phone call,
absolutely,
you lose the leverage.
That's so right.
I would bet a lot of money right now that what Ryan Poles is thinking, I can't call Tom Telesco with the Raiders. If I call him, I lose all the leverage. Now, at some point, who knows? Maybe he will. If he has decided he wants Caleb Williams, and I don't know what Ryan Poles is decided. I don't know what he's thinking. I haven't talked to him. So I can't tell you that. My opinion all along, Greg, has basically been based on this. All right. So I think maybe we would agree on this. Maybe we wouldn't. I don't know. But maybe we would agree on this, that right now Justin Fields, probably at his best, is a B quarterback in the NFL. At his best, he's 10, 11, 12. That's a guess, okay? But that's probably how I would look at it, all right? And so then you say, well, okay, if he is a B quarterback in the NFL, well, obviously you want to do better than that. And probably you do. But let's sort of look at the alternatives, all right? Let's look back at 3 years ago in the 2021 NFL draft. And let's look at that year when there was absolute no doubt franchise quarterback, maybe the best guy to come out since Andrew Luck. Fantastic prospect, Trevor Lawrence. All right. What's Trevor Lawrence been in 3 years?
Average.
Yeah.
Above average.
Average to good. Okay. Right. Number two pick in that draft, Zach Wilson. Disaster. Bust. Number three pick in that draft, Trey Lance. Disaster. Bust. Number 11 pick in that draft, Justin Fields. Not bad. Not bad. I might argue that right now, well, no, I wouldn't argue that he's better than Trevor Lawrence, but he's close. All right. And then number 15, Mac Jones. Debacle. All right. Not debacle, but a failed pick. All right. So there are five guys who've been picked in the first half of the first round of the draft 3 years ago. And not a single one is absolutely going to be a long-term great quarterback in the NFL. That's all I base my feelings on, honestly. And again, I don't watch a lot of college football. I actually watched two Caleb Williams games from start to finish. I was in the house at Colorado where he had a very impressive day against a team that put no pressure on him. Then I watched the Notre Dame game on a Saturday night, sitting right where I'm sitting right now, writing the first half of my column on a Saturday night, and watching Caleb Williams play terribly when he's not protected well. And I just thought to myself at that time, said, okay, you know, not his fault, but look at what happened to Bryce Young in his rookie year. Terrible protection, terrible year, and everybody is wondering if he's got a chance now. So all I'm saying is everybody says, well, geez, well, if you go a year or two before then you got Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert in the top six, you know, along with Tua. So you could also use that year. We can talk about this until we're blue in the face. The fact is that I think you're lucky if you get a 50-50 return on a franchise quarterback if you're going to pick him in the top three or five. And so that's why I think I'd much rather build a great team around a B quarterback than jettison yet another quarterback and draft Caleb Williams and hope that he's the guy.
See, Peter, my belief is, and I realize I could be wrong, but since he's come into the league, I don't feel that he has been coached, played to his what he does best, that the offense the last two years, really did not play to his strengths at all. And so it's like, what is he? We don't know what he is. And then I said, you know, they bring in Shane Waldron, and Shane Waldron comes from Seattle. He has Geno Smith, and Geno Smith has been a bust up until a couple years ago when he went with Shane Waldron. And he turns Geno Smith into a Pro Bowl player. And, you know, to me, there's too much talent, raw talent, with Justin Fields. Don't forget, we saw that playoff game between Clemson and Ohio State where Justin Fields totally outplayed Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, are you going to throw that out the window?
Yeah.
Given all the circumstances that have been going on here, I mean, you know, I've been doing this a long time. That's not what I would do. I'm not making the decision.
Yeah. But, you know, I've also said this, Greg, that it could be that the brain trust of the Bears looks at Caleb Williams and says, this guy is going to be a top five quarterback in this league. This guy is going to put us on par with, you know, teams that have Mahomes and Josh Allen and the great, great quarterbacks in this league. So if you feel that way and you're willing to put your, you know, your reputation and your job on the line, then go ahead and pick him. I just think that there are so many examples of the fact of, you know, where you could build a team. And look, I have theorized, and I did it at one point late in the season. I forget, I don't have it in front of me, but I theorized that if the Bears wanted to trade down twice, they could theoretically end up with eight picks in the first two rounds of the next two drafts. And to me, Jimmy Johnson always used to say, and I agree with him, he said, I'm no better than anybody else at you know, getting guys wrong in drafts and drafting busts. I do that too. But he always said, getting a lot of picks basically makes your average, you can still bat 400 in the draft and be great if you've got twice as many picks as everybody
else.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I don't know. That's what I would do, but who knows if that's what polls will do.
Well, we'll know within the next 6 weeks or so, one way or the other. I got one other question for you, because I said no more than a half hour, and this goes back. I just want to remember, think if I recalling this correctly. I didn't see it for a while, and then this goes back into the, you know, probably 2005 area or something like that. And Rutgers had those good football teams under Greg Schiano. Yeah. There was a Thursday night game there.
Yeah.
And you were there and we talked.
Yeah.
Was that the game that James Gandolfini led Rutgers out of the tunnel?
Oh, my God. I don't remember. The reason is I got there a little bit late. And I don't know. But I'll tell you what. He was at a lot of games.
Oh, I know that. He was a big
Rutgers. For some reason,
the crowd went wild. And I think that was the game that you were there.
Yeah, they beat Louisville the night I was there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Louisville was really good at the time. But, yeah, it looks like, look, you know, college football is so screwed up. How in the world does Chip Kelly go from being the head coach at UCLA to an offensive coordinator in the same league? That's the weirdest thing. All of college football is a mess. But
NIL has changed everything, and I'm sure that's why Saban stepped down. He said, "I don't want to deal with this anymore."
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Peter, can I keep you for another minute? I just got another question or two. This is inspired by Bears Junkie 23 Hall of Famer, who writes, "Peter King is the greatest NFL journalist of all time. Give that man a gold jacket." I totally agree with him. And one of the things that I wanted to ask you is, did the state of sports journalism have anything to do with your retirement? And what I mean by that is, because of the internet and blogs and so many amateurs now joining the world of sports journalism, it has degraded the quality of sports journalists. And so when I read Peter King, I know I'm reading Peter King, one of the greatest sports journalists of all time. When you look at the landscape of what's going on with sports journalism, does it sadden you like it does me? And I think Greg would agree with me.
Yeah, well, thanks for the kind words, really. It may have had a little to do with it, but I basically had reached the point that, you know, there are a lot of things in covering the game that I really didn't care very much about anymore. I dreaded the thought of going to the combine and being awake till 1:30 in the morning, five nights in a row. I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to, you know, cover coaching searches and leave my phone, I leave the ringer on my phone when I go to bed at night. I'm done with that. And I understand that it has to be done and things like that are important and I value them, but I just knew that I didn't want to do that anymore. And that, plus the fact that you're right, the written word has been devalued. There wasn't much I could do about that. People were not paying as much as I love doing my column. And, you know, a lot of the great reactions I got when I retired, I never asked NBC this question at all, but I almost will guarantee you that column was not profitable for NBC because people don't read anymore. And that's unfortunate, but that's the way the media is today.
All right,
Peter, go ahead. Hold on, I'm sorry.
Just my final question is, everyone in the chat room, this is, of course, primarily focused for Bears fans. And so they're asking, do you have a favorite Greg Gabriel story or a Chicago Bears story that you'd like to share with us?
Well, I hate to skip over Greg, but I'll give you my favorite Bears story is that, you know, I was in the house when Sean Landetta whiffed the punt for the Giants in the 1985 season. You know, when the Bears were just killing everybody. And I'll never forget that day. First of all, it was ungodly cold. It was windy. It was ridiculous conditions at Soldier Field. And I remember watching that game that day and thinking, nobody is beating the Bears. This is the next NFL dynasty. And it was for about 3 weeks. And then after that, you know, no wonder there are no dynasties. A team that good just couldn't stay on top. But that's my favorite Bears story.
Well, I know one thing, Peter. I'm going to miss our conversations the 2 weeks going up to leading up to the draft, but you'll probably still get involved anyway. You'll probably still have as much information as you always have.
I don't think so, Greg. I don't think I will this year, because you know what? Doing the mock draft and trying to be conversant and knowledgeable about all those picks, it's a tremendous investment of time. And that's one of the things and it was fun because it was competitive, but I'll tell you what, that takes a lot of time. And I don't think I'll be putting that time in this year. I'll be watching everybody else doing the mock draft, and I won't be jealous.
Well, Peter, enjoy your retirement. It's been well.
Thanks,
earned.
Guys. Thank hey, it's very nice of you to have me on, and thanks for all the kind words.
Thank you for coming on.
Take care.
Okay. Take care.
It's Peter King. Wow, what a treat. Just amazing.
That was terrific and very, very enlightening.
Yeah, an amazing man. So when you say enlightening, what you care to expound on that?
I'm just of the belief that, and I said this 2 weeks ago, and I've known Peter, you know, since 85 when he started working at Newsday. So that's 39 years ago that I met him. If he has sources, he's never going to give them up. And I think he knows a lot more than he is willing to say, especially on the situation here.
Yeah. Indeed. I wanted to ask him that question about the state of journalism, because, you know, that is a big bugaboo for me. And he mentioned that there were like 12 newspapers covering the Giants and New York football at the time. And I grew up in an era where I would run to the corner store and pay a nickel for four or five newspapers that were being published in Chicago to read every single word about the Chicago Bears and Chicago sports teams. And those were great days, because the journalists were so fantastic. The columnists were professional columnists that was all fact-based opinion and stuff. And unfortunately now, not to denigrate any of the amateur sports journalists that are out there, but it's gotten really, you know, or sometimes I can't even read a sentence because it just doesn't make, there are no editors anymore. So it's really bad. Your stuff though, Greg, you're not an amateur journalist. You're a professional writer. I love reading your stuff.
No, I don't know about that. I got to tell you something. When I started writing, so it was 2011, I bought into, can't even think of the name of it anymore, but National Football Post. So I was a part owner. I had invested in it, and it failed. Cost me a lot of money. But I remember when I first started writing, I had, you know, first of all, I wasn't a very good student, and especially an English student. And I really struggled. I mean, it took a long time, and it was self-taught. It's a lot easier now, but you still, and you know what's funny is that there's stuff that if I have a good idea of what I want to do, I always write early in the morning. I get up 4:35, and that's when I do it. There's stuff I can put, it ends up being the best stuff I do. I can do in about 45 minutes. And it just, but when I got to really think about it, then it comes across, you know, I'm not satisfied with it, put it that way.
Yeah. Well, and you know, one of the things I like about your writing is that it's very conversational. It's when I'm reading it, it feels like you and I are talking on this show. And
that's what I try to do. I try to just, you know, like it's a conversation. And I've always, you know, my degree's in teaching.
Mm-hmm.
So, and like even when I'm on here, it's like I'm always trying to teach.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people might not appreciate that because I might teach a little too hard.
Old school, huh?
Yeah, you got it. Get done it. So, but that's what I was teaching the scouting class for. National Football Post, and we used to, and Danny Shimon was in it, and others, that was fun, you know, because, you know, you'd mix in teaching how to scout, and scouting is an art, you know, and it takes a long time. You know what? It's been 12 years since I've been with the Bears. I'm better now than I was 12 years ago, because you're always learning, and you talk to people, and you pick up little things, and the game changes, and you've got to follow the way the game changes. And it's, to me, it's just, it's a fascinating business. You got to have an eye for it. If you don't have an eye for it, you're not going to be good at it. I guess you want to call it an analytical eye. And because you got to look at the little things, it's all, you know, it's like, okay, you got a big player there and you can think he's good, but you got to start like with an offensive lineman. You start with this, at least I do. You got to start with the stance and then go from there, you know, and obviously the body type and his height, his weight, his length, a lot of things. You got to have the right parts and then to see how he actually plays. And you can never criticize a guy for the way he's been taught. You just got to say, this is the way he's coached. And you know, if you make a school call, then you find out his ability to learn and retain. But now when you're just looking at tape, you got to guess. But I remember, like, there's, and if I said this a while ago, you know, we were looking at an offensive lineman. This is when Jerry and I were together. And I think it was a guy in the University of California. And Jerry says, his hand use is terrible. We can't take this guy. Because, you know, he'd come out of his stance and he'd have his hands out like this. You know, and I said, Jerry, look at the tape, that last play again. It's pass play, obviously. He said, what? I said, look what every single offensive lineman's doing. They're all doing the same thing. He's being taught that.
Wow, very smart. He's like,
because a lot of times when you're watching tape, you've got tunnel vision. You're watching one guy, and you have no clue what the other guys are doing.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was like, wow, I didn't even think of that. And it's just, you know, it's just how you learn how to watch tape. And then you say, okay, if he's doing it, the next guy doing it, the next guy's doing it, that's what their coach is teaching them to do.
Greg, what position would you say is the toughest to scout?
Toughest for me is DBs.
And that is?
Yeah, DBs, because, you know, like an offensive lineman, a defensive lineman, they're doing something every single play. Okay, so it's really easy to get a feel for them. A DB, you know, there's 30-35 pass plays in the game, but he might get thrown on three times. So you don't have a lot of tape to see ball reactions, transition, and things like that. So you really, you got to watch the whole game just to see how he's covering his guy. And is there a reason why they're not throwing on him? It's because he's doing a damn good job with the coverage. But you got to look, but to look at the whole picture, which, you know, brain dead, and I can't think of the guy's name. We took the, this is after the Cutler trade, and we didn't have first and second round picks, and we took, I think it might have been my last draft, you know, the safety out of Florida in the third round. And I had to watch, and I'm not exaggerating here, 16 games over 2 years to get a feel for that guy.
Wow.
Because in his last year at Florida, Major Wright, his name just popped back into my head. His last year at Florida, Major Wright and a guy named Hill were the two safeties, both very good safeties. When you watch the Florida tape, nobody threw across the middle. Everybody threw outside the numbers. And so you watch tape after tape after tape after tape, and it's like, when are they going to throw on this guy? When am I going to see him have to do something? You know, you didn't see it. You had to go back to the year before to really figure out exactly what he was. Now, you saw the run support.
Mm-hmm.
You could see that. But a lot of the coverage things you couldn't see, and they were playing a lot of two deep and stuff like that. So it was just a very hard thing to do to get a proper feel for what kind of player he was. And so, you know, it's easier for me to do now, but I think if I miss, I'm going to miss more on a DB than say any other position where, mm-hmm. you know, I could take, say, Ballard. I know I use Ballard a lot. Ballard coached DBs. And you know, he's as good as I've ever seen getting a DB right. Hey, it was Ballard who jumped on the table for Peanut Tillman.
Mm.
Okay, and a couple of Nate Vasher. You know, I think I told you the story. You know, they were all in his area. He had that Southwest area. He had New Mexico, Oklahoma, Texas, Louisiana, which have a lot of players out of there. But, you know, Nate Vasher, he did not run at the combine. So he waits to the Texas Pro Day. And the first thing they do is the vertical and the long jump and the shuttles. And he just tears up the shuttles. And he pretty good job in the two jumps. I mean, but his 20 shuttle was like in the threes, and his three cone was like 6'7" or 6'6", something like that, like outrageous number. His quickness was rare. So then he runs 4.57. You know, and it's like, you know, the erection that you had just goes limp because you can't run. You can't bet it. So Ballard goes back, times him again. 4.56. So he goes, I'm going to get him one more time, coach. So he goes back a couple days before we got to come in for meetings. Calls me up. Got him 4.51. I said, you are a lying son of a bitch. I said, that guy couldn't run 4.51 if you strap jet engines to his ankles. And he just laughed and says, but that's what the clock said.
That's hilarious. One of the things about scouting that I've always wanted to ask you, and then we'll get to some of the questions that people I have shared on in the chat room, is when you're scouting a, you know, defensive backs, you know, that's a tough one for you. How much do you know about the defensive schemes that are runs to help with the evaluation of the player? You know, so if you're, you know, evaluating a kid out of Alabama, do you have to know that defensive scheme from Alabama to really make an accurate assessment of the talent of that player?
You know, it's a great question. And if you're making a school call, you find out the answer.
Okay.
Because you're talking to the coaches and you know exactly what they want to do.
Okay.
You and me putting tape on right now, we don't have that answer. So we're
right. Guessing. Right.
And yeah, and it's, and that can be part of it. You know, the more information you have going into doing the evaluation, the easier it makes the evaluation.
Mm-hmm. I think a good example of that was when you were scouting Jervon Dexter last year. You said that his get off the line of scrimmage on snaps was always slow, and then you learned that was what he was being told to do by the defense, and you shared
He's playing a two gap team, which is the exact opposite of what the Bears do. The Bears play a one gap attack scheme, so you had to really. You know, so you got to look at the raw traits. And I'm sure they probably went down and had a private workout with him and then got a good feel for what they thought he could do. I'll tell you, he played well. And I really believe that guy's going to be a freaking monster. Did you see the picture of him the other day that came over?
I mean, we were talking about that in the chat. Yeah.
He gets it. That means he's taking care of himself. He posed for that picture for one reason. Look the way I look right now, and I didn't look like that last year.
That's right.
And so you know, he's getting into it. And that means he's buying into being a pro and he's listening to the vets in the locker room. And that's all part of growing. I just hope Pickens is doing the same thing. Because both of those guys got great talent. You look at the numbers, like go back to the combine a few weeks ago. Those guys had good numbers and a defensive tackle in this year's draft. If not better.
Swifty has just reported that Derrick Henry is now a Baltimore Raven. Did you expect him to go that quickly? I had a feeling it was going to take a while for him to sign somewhere. But
yeah, I thought it might take a little while, and only because of age and, and what happens with running backs. If you look at his season, his 23 season was not like we're used to seeing on Henry. So does that mean is he starting to go downhill? But now he's going to go to Baltimore and he'll play a rotation and he won't have to have as many touches and he can be that much more effective. You know, that could end up being a great, and they got a really good offensive line. That could really be a good move for him.
And D. Starren says, how can the Ravens sign all these big dollar free agents while paying a quarterback, Lamar Jackson? And that is the, you know, you mentioned the frustration from Bears fans. We've got all this money, fourth or fifth most cap money after the signing of Jalen Johnson. And yet, you know, we're not making these big dollar free agents. But you said it perfectly. It's Poles' methodical, I'm not going to overpay approach to building a team.
Yeah, I've said it too. It's disciplined.
Disciplined, yeah.
You've got to – he's got a philosophy, and he's not deviating from that philosophy. I remember he told me last year on the first day of free agency, and it was just, you know, a text conversation. And he, you know, asked him about McGlinchey, and he said, I was okay with the average, wasn't okay with the guarantee, especially at his age. And so we walked away. And he goes, so I'll draft one. He didn't say I'll draft one in the first round. He goes, I'll just draft one. What he did was draft one in the first round. You know, so he's got an alternative plan.
Okay, the alternative plans. Boy, wouldn't we love to know what those are. Creighton Wilfong asked this question about 5 minutes before we went live. You and I talked about it briefly before the show. What would it take for the Bears to make a trade with Philadelphia for defensive end Josh Sweat? So first of all, I'll ask you, would he complement this Bears pass rush? And what would it take? Draft picks in 2025? Because we don't have any right now.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're standing pat with what you got now, you'd have to use something next year. And then you'd probably have, because it is next year, you'd probably have to pay a little bit of a premium. Okay, based on what the Bears paid for Montez Sweat, I'm going to say little brother Sweat's going to be worth a third-round pick. Okay, because he's not the same player.
Right.
And maybe even a little less than that. But the Bears today don't have that capital. And, you know, being that there's a lot of needs that haven't been filled yet. And so how are they going to fill those needs? Well, you know, like I said earlier, I can see maybe one other multi-year deal contract being done, maybe two. But, you know, and when you look at the contracts they've done, they haven't been 3 years and 2 years. You know, there haven't been these crazy outlandish deals, and the money's been very, very fair. And when you look at the deal that they gave Swift, they actually, you know, the market went up for running backs, but they still got him at a very reasonable price as compared to what the other running backs got yesterday. You know, so, you know, people said, I've read stuff that people were in on, or the Bears were in on Barkley. I don't believe that for a second, except, you know, I mean, look at how soon into free agency was that deal announced besides 3 or 4 minutes?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so that means that deal's been done.
Yeah.
Okay, so how long ago did they walk away? You know, I thought it was going to be minimum $12 million and probably more for Barkley. And it turned out being a lot more than that. Mm-hmm. So, again, you look at what Ryan Poles has done, what's his philosophy, and where's he come from? And he, and both he and Ian Cunningham come from the school of, I don't want to pay running backs.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what? Why are they going to give somebody $15 million?
Yeah. Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense.
Yep.
I get what he does for the team, but it's, you give a running back, okay, Barkley, he's already had an ACL. He's played 5 years in the league. Okay. The odds are he's going to start going downhill. Could he be a freak and be an Emmitt Smith or something like that and go on and have a great, you know, another 5-6 years? Absolutely, he could. But when you look at the averages are against it. So that says, okay, if we got to give him a 4-year deal, we might be eating the last 2 years of that deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then that becomes, it's not a good business decision.
Hmm. All right, let's tackle a few more questions here. Obiwachi has asked a couple of times about your thoughts on Tyson Bagent, the current Bears backup quarterback.
I like Tyson Bagent. You know, and I keep saying, you know, how can they keep him as a backup? Well, he went 2-2. Mm-hmm. What do you want out of the guy? As a rookie, and he will get better.
Yes. I'm with you 100% on that. Do you think, you know, there's been a lot of controversy about his arm strength, and he says he's got a cannon.
He doesn't have Justin Fields' arm. He doesn't have Josh Allen's arm.
Right.
But he's got a plenty strong enough arm.
He's got a stronger arm than Bo Nix, in my opinion. But that's debatable.
You know, I hate throwing sessions at the combine,
mm-hmm.
but Bo Nix was short on a lot of throws in the combine. And that, you know, that's a little concerning. And to play here, and I'll go back to, you know, what Pep has told us, that the two toughest stadiums to play in the National Football League are here in Cleveland. And he said, and the reason being is both of them sit on the lake, and it changes, you know, just the way the wind comes in, the dampness of the air. He goes, sometimes you got to change your game plan just because of the weather conditions.
Yeah.
You know, you can practice something. And he said, so I go, you know, they're going to build a dome. He said, that'll change everything.
Let me get a few more questions in here. Bellissimo asks, why doesn't the salary cap get calculated on net pay to players? It would negate the state-by-state tax advantage, disadvantages. That's a good question for the NFLPA. Who is it that's in charge of that? The former offensive lineman. I think he's still the president of that. But, yeah.
He's not anymore. That was the J.C. Treader.
Yeah, J.C.'s not.
He got replaced. 2 days. Okay. Because he's not a player anymore. So I'm sure he's still working for the union, but he's not an active player, so he can't be
the
president. But the
you like Berlissimo's idea of calculating net pay to players?
You know, it's I get what he's saying,
mm-hmm.
but I think the league and the players association are, and I'm guessing here. Mm-hmm. are going to say, we can't be held accountable for what each individual state does tax-wise. Right. I mean, makes it too freaking complicated.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's an advantage. You play for Florida, a team in Florida,
mm-hmm.
Nevada, Texas, Tennessee, you're mm-hmm. paying state income tax. That's putting more money in your pocket right away.
You got to love that. Godson asks about Dallas Turner's measurables. They're off the chart. What do you think about Dallas Turner as a pass rusher and a potential draft pick for the Bears?
Really? There's four I really like, and I'll take any of them. Mm-hmm. And right now, unless something, there's only one guy left worth a damn on the market, and that's Hunter. And you know, there's a lot of fans that were like AJ Epenesa, and that was the last guy I wanted because you know I watch every Bills game. AJ Epenesa has in reality been a disappointment to that team. Mm. Okay, he was drafted in the second round to be a starter, and he has started four games in 4 years. And if you look, since they drafted him, they have drafted a guy, an edge in the first round, and signed three free agents. Why? Because he couldn't get the job done. He is a backup rotational player, and he's good in that role.
Right.
He's very good in that role. But don't ask him to be a starter. And the Bears need a starter at the end opposite Montez Sweat.
Yeah. So you like, you're a fan of, you mentioned the four defensive
ends. Yeah, okay. Chop Robinson, Leitu, Dallas Turner, and
Verse.
The Florida State guy, Verse.
Okay.
I'll take any of them.
What about?
They're all a little bit different. I think the guy with the best upside
is,
because he's like 20 years old, is Chop.
Okay. Now, I've seen him in some mocks go early second round. You think he could last into the second round?
No.
Yeah, I was surprised to see
that. Not with those measurables. And given the fact that he's 20 years old.
Mm-hmm. You know, a guy that I've been looking at a little lately is Marshawn Nealon. I really like that, the potential on that. He's a second, third rounder who could, you know, in time, progress into a steady contributor on this roster.
I don't want you to say the word sleeper because it's the wrong word. But my guy is, if you strike out there, is Mo Kamara.
Ooh.
No. And my comp for Mo Kamara is Brandon Graham. Now, he's only going into his 15th year in the league. are pretty much the exact same size coming out. Brandon Graham's like 5 pounds heavier. Same height. Graham was a couple pounds heavier coming from Michigan. Mo Kamara is almost 0.2 seconds faster than Brandon Graham was. He's got something like 25 sacks the last 2 years or something like that. Productive as hell.
Yeah, and a
nonstop motor. Doesn't have ideal height, but he's got good length. He's, you know, he's 6'1 and 3/8, 6'1 and a half. Mm-hmm. But he's got almost 33-inch arms. And so when you figure in the, you know, he's not 6'2, that's long arms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he's got the required length, exceptional get off, exceptional speed, great motor. Brandon Graham went in the first round. I don't think Mo Kamara's going to go in the first round.
Yeah,
I think he'll. I think he'll go in the second.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that could knock him is, you know, he played at Colorado State, so it's a little less. It's the Mountain West. Competition isn't quite as good, but just put on the tape. He's a bitch to block.
TJ Johnson is auditioning to be the Bears general manager. He asks about this scenario. He says, do you think it's possible that the Bears address starting edge, defensive tackle, and wide receiver 2 in the draft and then sign Uche as that edge player, DJ Shark as the wide receiver 3, and Williams, the guard out of Miami. I thought he was gone already, but maybe not.
No, Williams is coming off an ACL, and he's not going to be able to.
That's right. That's
he's right. Not going to be able to play until November. And people keep saying, you got to sign this guy. Why are you going to sign a guy that's going to miss over half the season?
That's right. I mean,
could they do it? Yeah, but you're sitting him on the bench.
Yeah.
Somebody say to me, well, that's the guy that Poles really wants, and he knows he's got to sit, and that's why they made the trade for Bates. I'm not buying that one.
Yeah, that's a tough one to buy.
You gave up a fifth round. Bates is a situation where they wanted to sign him 2 years ago. They did sign him 2 years ago. They signed him to an offer sheet. Buffalo matched. He became available again, and they jumped at him because the guy they really wanted. Poles has an affinity for him. Simo has an affinity for him.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. I got a couple more good ones here. The C-Sharp asks, does Greg think the local media will wage war on Bulls in the front office if the Bears trade the number one overall pick? I think that's a pretty obvious.
Yes, you know why? You know why? Because they're wrong. They will have been wrong. And the only way they're going to – and rather than accept the fact that they're wrong, they're going to wage war.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm in a private chat on X. There's about 12, 13 guys in it, and it's really a lot of fun.
Good.
And it's like unanimous that the media is going to go crazy if they don't take Caleb. And the way that it's going to play out, because they just don't want to be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing to do with what's the right thing to do for the team. And it has everything to do with, well, I was right. See?
Mm-hmm. Well, I will, and their defense, and not that they need me defending them, is that the national media and the local media, I think they are all in unison that Caleb could potentially be a transformational type quarterback. And so, you know, so they think you can't pass that up, and you get a chance to reset the quarterback salary. It, to them, I think it's reasonable for them to think
what if they, you know, because there's more, I've said it 1,000 times,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
more than just with a quarterback.
Yes.
More than just the raw talent. It's mm-hmm the intangibles.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They get done doing their research. And they can't be done now because they haven't. And I don't even know if you got to do a private workout with all these guys as long as you get a long time, you know, interview, classroom session. Because, you know, you've seen a lot of tape. You've seen them throw. It's really, you know, what's upstairs? How do they think? How do they process? Can they learn and retain? And you can do that, you can do it on a visit here, you can do it on a visit at the school, but you need more than 15 minutes, you need hours.
Mm-hmm.
Like 2 to 3 hours, you know, and really get into the guy's head. So I've been saying all along, I think they take a quarterback. Okay, and if you trade down and you get a bunch of picks, you trade down twice and you get a bunch of picks, then you got that ammo to get a quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Is there a quarterback in your mind that you would love? Is JJ the guy for you? JJ McCarthy?
JJ or Daniels, I'd be happy with either. You know, if we get JJ on here, mm-hmm, like his agent said we could, after his pro day's the 20th, so I'm going to send Brian a text probably around the 18th or 19th. Mm-hmm. So that'll be next week. Say, hey, Brian.
Yeah. You know, good luck at the pro day. And by the way, don't forget.
right. And I'm also going to throw, and, you know, I said this to you before, but, you know, because he's going to be making visits and private workouts, you know, to pencil them in at 11 o'clock on a Monday or a Tuesday when we do the show, that may be difficult. So I'm going to throw it open to, hey, we'll do it Saturday at 1 and just record it and play it on the next show. So, you know, I'm going to give them all those options.
Great. Somebody has a question regarding Shane Waldron. You mentioned to Peter King, you know, that you don't think that Justin Fields was used correctly. And George Q asks, is Shane Waldron going to be the right coach to get the most out of Justin Fields? And I'll add to that question, Greg, and say, what is it? What is the proper way to use Justin Fields? Because to me, He's like the quarterback that we hated to face in Sandlot football because you couldn't catch him. He was the fastest guy on the football field, and he was playing quarterback, and he was just running around until somebody got open, and he fired that ball. But that you can't play professional football that way. You got to, you know, play on timing. So what's the right way?
One GM said to me, who likes Fields, said that, in his opinion, the proper way to use Justin Fields is the way Philly uses Jalen Hurts.
Yeah.
And, you know, and see, I go back to this on Waldron. And yes, I'm on repeat mode. Wash, rinse, repeat, whatever. It's what he did with Geno Smith is beyond remarkable.
Yeah.
And Justin Fields has far more talent than Geno Smith ever thought about having. Mm-hmm. So why can't he do that with Justin Fields? Unless there's something up here that just doesn't click with Justin Fields. You and I aren't going to have that answer.
Right.
He would working with him, but he's not going to have that answer now because he's not even allowed to, in reality, talk. I'm sure they have, but you're not supposed to talk football with him. Can't do it until the off-season program starts next month.
All right. Well, that's going to be the big major story to watch if indeed Justin Fields is going to be the quarterback for the Bears in 2024. It's just that relationship between Shane Waldron and what he can get out of this quarterback. Let me, I'm going to throw a question at you that you probably won't like, but it's been asked.
Not I want to answer.
Martin says, what made you draft Gerard Gilbert besides jumping? And I got a feeling that had
nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
It was funny. It was the third round. It wasn't the first round. It wasn't the second round. He had great traits and his tape was really good. It's, you know, and it was, and let me say this about the draft process. It's never one guy's opinion. It's the collective opinion of the room. Okay, and I've said this before. We had a sign up in the room. It's not about who's right. It's about being right. But if you don't have a unanimous conviction or pretty damn close to unanimous conviction that that's the guy to take, you can't take him. And at that time, according to the way we set up our board, that was the right player to take. Did we miss? Yes. But don't forget, it was a third round pick. It wasn't a first round pick. It wasn't a second round pick. And I think it was a later third round pick. So, you know, the deeper you go into a draft, the chances of being correct start to minimize, except, you know, the problem was, if I recall, that was the first pick we had
in that draft. Yeah, I want to say that
it might that have been sounds... the second, but it was, but it, I think it was after the, you know, one of the, you know, we were 2 years in a row without first and seconds because of the Jay Cutler deal.
Yeah,
and how about this? You know, and so the year we take or we trade for Cutler, which is in the, you know, like the first 10 days of April. I don't remember the exact date. At that point, now I've got Harry Hiestand out working offensive lineman. And he was, in fact, that day, he was working out Phil Lodeho, who went in the second round to Minnesota and had a pretty decent career. But he was at the University of Oklahoma. And, you know, Harry was working out all the top guys that could possibly go first, second round, because we were going to draft a tackle. So now we make that trade, and now I don't have a first or second round pick, and it's like, well, what am I supposed to do that day? It's like, my job just got taken away from me, you know? And so it's like, hey, Harry, come home. You don't have to go to the one tomorrow. Yeah.
Gosh, that's so disappointing. Knowing what you know now about Jay Cutler, and even back then, were you in agreement with that acquisition? I know how important it is to get a quarterback.
I was totally on board because and it had nothing to do with Jay Cutler, and I didn't know anything about Jay Cutler, the person. Knowing mm-hmm. what I know about Jay Cutler, the person now, you know, that would have been jump on the table against it.
Yeah, okay. Right.
But then, and it was really going back to the season before, Jerry was sold on the fact that Kyle Horton couldn't get it done. Mm. Okay, so he knew, that's fine. So he took a swing. Mm-hmm. And I'm mm-hmm. not going to say he missed.
Yeah.
But he didn't get more than a double out of it.
Right.
That's a good assessment. And you know, and really when you compare it to what you got to give up now, we would have had to give up a hell of a lot more than we gave up.
Oh yes.
Now, so you know, if you use that as comparison, it was a great deal. But you know, Jay was not the easiest guy to get along with. Mm. You know, he fought everything. Mm. You know, he wanted to do things his way. Up the freaking yin yang. And people say, well, why do you question Caleb Williams? Well, it's like Jay Cutler. Remember I said the other day, I don't want Jay Cutler walking in the building again. It's the intangibles. It has nothing to do with the talent. I know what the talent is. Talent's great.
Mm-hmm.
But are we going to get – is he going to turn in to Patrick Mahomes?
Right.
I can't answer that. You can't answer it, and there's nobody in the world that can answer that. You can mm-hmm. only guess.
That is the guess that's on everyone's mind right now. Before I get you out of here, I want you to talk a little bit about Jalen Johnson's press conference. You and I talked about it for a second or two before the start of the show. It's really hard not to talk about this. He admitted that he had an addiction to sex. Have you ever heard?
And what did I say originally? I'm 72 years old and I wish I had one.
Yeah, I know.
You know, things just change when you get a little older. So
yes, they do.
So I don't know. I mean, it's like, where'd that come from? I mean, I got to say this. I got to applaud him a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously that's pretty personal.
Yes.
And that he even brought it up takes balls on his part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so from that part, I really respect him for that.
Me too.
I get, you know, if there was a curveball to be thrown in that presser, that was the curveball because nobody saw that one coming.
No.
But, you know, it's, I think that he felt it was necessary that he get that out, that it's something that bothers him in his everyday life, and he's trying to fix it.
Well, you know, it's interesting because now a lot more and more athletes are coming out about mental health issues that have impacted them. You know, J.J. McCarthy is one who talked about his mental health situation and that he got help and it's helped him tremendously. And that's what Jalen Johnson talked about. We're seeing that a lot more nowadays. When you were in clubhouses, you know, what was the whole mental health landscape like? Were players openly talking about it in the locker room? Were you aware that, hey, there's something wrong with this guy? You know, it certainly isn't like it is now where players would publicly talk about it. I have an addiction to sex, or I have an addiction to gambling or whatever.
I can't think of anybody offhand. I mean, if mm-hmm. I sat back and really gave it some thought, I could probably come up with something. But I mean, just, I'm going to say in the last 5-6 years that people have become more open about situations like that. Mm-hmm. You know, that was private. You know, maybe your therapist knew, maybe your position coach knew, and you know, that's about it. So it's different. I you know, to answer your question, I think it's totally different now because you see it more and more in everyday life. People come up, you know, no matter what their profession is, all of a sudden you come up that they got, you know, some sort of problem, be it a drug problem, a sex problem, depression, whatever, you know, and you know, God love them because it's, you know, it's a heavy burden that they're carrying in their mind.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, you know, you're going to confession and you're relieving yourself of that burden. God, yep. I got that off my chest, you know, yeah. And you know, so it like makes you feel a whole lot better about yourself. I'm guessing, because, you know, that hasn't happened to me.
Yeah. Oh, I think, you know, I've had some issues with, you know, anxiety. And once I started to talk about it with the therapist, I felt like the weight of the world was lifted off my shoulder, you know, and it's something that you hate to bring forward because it's anxiety. And so people are going to say, what are you afraid of? You know, what are you afraid of? It's just a chemical imbalance. More adrenaline is released than should be. And all of a sudden you start getting nervous and stuff. And so when I was able to talk about it, all of a sudden I realized, man, I feel a lot better about that situation. So,
you know, the thing is though, and I've only been about, you know, when my first marriage, you know, went through counseling and stuff with that. And mm-hmm. The key is getting somebody you trust.
Yes. Yes.
You know, it's funny. I'll bring it out now. Because we go in to see this lady, and I'm looking at the diplomas on the wall, and I'm seeing University of Wisconsin. And this was back in Buffalo. And then there was that school in Ohio, and I can't think of the name of it, a smaller school, but pretty much run by the students.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very liberal school. And, you know, I'm not necessarily a liberal. So I'm not a hardcore conservative either, for anybody who wants to ask. A lot of social issues, I'm pretty much in the middle or maybe even to the left on some. But anyway, I looked at those things and I looked at her, and her name was Nancy. I go, I'm glad you sound the way you do, because I'm looking at those diplomas and I didn't think this was going to work. And she just started laughing. And you know what her answer was? Yeah, I went to school to those places and I was real liberal, but then I got married and got a mortgage and have kids.
That usually does it. That usually does it. Welcome to the real world. All right, everyone. I want to thank a record crowd of people joining us live. And I know there will be many more listening to this show on demand. Please share it with others. We'll have some highlights of Peter King's interview shared on our social media.
That was terrific. I mean, yeah. That just...
What a guy.
It thrilled me. And like I said, I've known him a long time, but I thought it was terrific.
Yeah, he really, really was. So I know you'll probably reach out to him after the show. Please tell him that.
Hang up here.
Please tell him he was a great big hit. Lots of positive comments. And Greg, you and I are back here next Monday, I want to say.
Monday with Eric Galco, who is the executive director of the Shrine Bowl. East-West Shrine Bowl runs Optimum Scouting. Mm-hmm. So he's going to have a lot of thoughts on the draft.
Oof, Eric, that's going to be a great show.
Friends, I'm going to say going back not quite 15 years, mm-hmm. probably 12, 13 years. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, he's got me on his board of advisors for the Shrine Bowl, and which I love doing, love helping him with that. And he had, since he's taken it over, let's do a little overtime here.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, when I started scouting, the Shrine Bowl was the game, not Senior Bowl.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So this is in the and the Senior Bowl was good, mm-hmm. but players didn't want to go to the Senior Bowl because back in the 80s, mm-hmm. they had two-a-days. So they'd come in on Sunday, Monday morning you do the weigh and measure. Tuesday and Wednesday were double sessions. We're both, and it's like you're going to training camp again.
Yeah.
And they beat the hell out of these kids. And guys didn't want to play in it. You know,
can't blame them.
It's after they changed that it really, you know, changed the executive director, changed the rules because players were balking. In fact, you know, it used to be they got paid.
Mm-hmm.
Like the winning team got $800 and the losing team got $400 or something like that. I don't remember the exact, it wasn't a large sum of money, but they got something.
Yeah.
But the East-West game was always out at Palo Alto at Stanford, at the old Stanford Stadium, which mm-hmm. held, they had a Super Bowl there and it held better than 70,000 people. And mm-hmm. it was a convention for the West Coast Shriners.
Okay.
And there was, because I started going at 85 and I went like every year. And that place was packed for probably the first 10 years I went. And I'm talking minimum 70,000 people wow. every time they held the game. And they had like this big parade before where the Shriners were put on this awesome parade with these floats and everything coming into the stadium and like thousands of Shriners. It was really a sight to see. Well, the game started going downhill. And really became a second or third rate game. And Eric took it over 3 years ago. This is his third year. And he's brought it back. Last year, he had the most players drafted and one first rounder in like the last 15 years or something. This year, we think it's going to be even more than last year. They had a ton at the combine, more than any in recent memory at the combine, and showed well at the combine. Mm-hmm. So he's brought the game back, and you got to applaud him for that because it's been all him. It's been his work. He's done a great job.
I got the chance to interview him, and it was thanks to you because I when I asked him for the interview, he said yes, and then – on the show, he says, yeah, the reason I did the interview is because I know you work with Greg. So I'm looking forward to resuming that interview with him. And I will say something to the people in the chat who are draft Knicks. If you want to ask Eric Elko a question about a prospect, maybe try to limit it to players who were on the East-West Shrine Bowl because he'll know those guys.
He's going to know those guys back and forth.
Right,
he knows the other guys too. But Eric's an attorney by trade. He's got a law degree. He's a really smart guy. So it'll be an interesting show. And he was, you know, where Eric and I started working together closely is when I worked in the XFL. He was the league director of player personnel in XFL 2020. So. You know, before that, I knew him. We talked. We did some things for the National Football Post together, did some podcasts and mock drafts and stuff like that. But it was really starting in 2000 when I started working for the XFL in 2019, right after Pep hired me, like the next day, Eric called me. And I did not know Eric was working for the league at that time. Eric called me, reached out, and he goes, hey, buddy. And because he knew me so well, he was able to bounce things off me because, like the other guys who had the same position I had in, you know, with their teams, you know, he really didn't know them and they didn't know him. So I was like almost a middleman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it was a lot of fun.
Sounds like it was. We'll have more stories and more analysis next Monday with Eric Elko. That's Greg Gabriel. Follow him on the X Machine. It's at G Gabe Football. And of course, at Barrow Network is my account. Thanks to Peter King. Make sure you follow him, Peter_King, on the X Machine. He hasn't tweeted much since he announced his retirement, but I assume that he will resume.
Is there any news since we came on here? I have not looked at my X feed.
No, nothing significant. By the way,
The Derrick Henry.
Right. Mr. Shorty asked about the two helmets behind you, and I told him that the Bears helmet is signed by all of the people you drafted for a certain year.
That's a Giants helmet. This one is 2003 draft. The one I got over there is my first draft, 2002, with the Bears. Okay. So I got two where the entire draft class had signed the helmet.
How cool
is that? I couldn't go down and ask T-Med for a third helmet. You know, I thought he might get a little moody. So,
all right. Thank you again, everyone who joined us live and those who will watch later on demand. Really appreciate it. For Greg Gabel, I'm Aldo Gandia. Take care, everyone.
See you next week.